Hey, Drew.
Huh?
Can you guess who my favorite actor is?
Oh, let me think about it for a second. No.
Yes.
James Franco?
You mean James Franco?
Yeah.
I hate James Franco. But you're right. Can we talk about polymaths?
Yes.
You're listening to The Ourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
I got this problem.
I know you do.
It's growing. It's a growing problem. And I think it's becoming a problem for other people. And I think it's time that we addressed it. And maybe we can together we can come up with a solution. Yeah, we can combat the problem.
What is your problem?
I hate James Franco.
Oh.
But I love James Franco.
Yeah. Okay, good.
This is the problem.
I think a lot of people have that problem.
Everybody has that problem.
You have a very personal take on it, though.
I do. I'm sure I'm not alone in that, though, either. I mean, I'm sure that there are – I feel like there are two kinds of people who love-hate James Franco. There are the kinds of people who love-hate James Franco because they're sick of seeing James Franco.
Yeah, but he's
they're sick
charismatic
of hearing
guy.
About what James Franco is doing now.
Yeah.
You know, they're familiar with what James Franco has already done, and now they're hearing about him doing something else.
Right.
Then there are the other people who hate James Franco for the very specific reason that I hate James Franco, which is that James Franco, it's not enough that James Franco is a successful actor who performs in very good or at least interesting movies.
Yeah.
Often playing very iconic characters.
Okay.
That if one were, say, an actor.
Yeah.
He or she would be very inclined to portray.
Right.
It's not enough that he is doing that, but then he's also adding on these other layers of respectability. So he's becoming a scholar.
Yeah.
You know, he's studying at some of the most prestigious universities in the United States, at least, if not the world. And he's doing it successfully while also starring in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
He's appearing on a soap opera as a complete lark, almost like throwing it in the face, not only of the people who watch soap operas, because he's making a joke out of the fact that he's an actor and he's in a soap opera, but he's also making fun of the people who criticize him for appearing in a soap opera because he's pulling that off too.
Yeah.
He's successful at it. He's a novelist.
Yeah.
He's a musician.
Yep.
I think
I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is. Of course he is. He is multifaceted in a way that few people as popular in the public eye often accomplish.
He seems genuine.
And he's genuine.
Things.
He doesn't seem to be doing any of these things simply because they will get him more cred or anything.
There doesn't seem to be irony in what he's doing either.
No. He's pursuing them with total sincerity.
Yeah. And I think also for you, one thing that I think that sort of burns into you even more so is that many of the things he chooses to do are things you'd like to do.
All of them are things that I would like to do.
That if you were in James Franco's place, if in an alternate dimension, you're John Dedeke, the actor.
Yeah.
And you're becoming very successful, and so doors are opening, and you can do sort of what you want.
I don't have to be defined by my terrible performance as the Green Goblin, or the Green Goblin's son.
Let's get it right. You would be doing, like, as we hear the things that he's doing, as the news comes out that he's, you know, writing a book, or he's going to appear on, General Hospital or something, you're like, I would have done that. That is what
exactly
I would have done.
Exactly. If put into those that those parameters, if like in the same circumstance, yeah, I place myself there, I would, yes, I yeah would do that. I recognize his actions as things that I would do. So it is literally like there is a second me,
yeah,
capitalizing on all of these fortuitous circumstances and doing it well.
It came to
admirably.
It came to a head for me when the video was released of him at he's singing I think some soul song at a crossdresser's like gathering.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like the Franco-ness of that was yeah off the charts. Like you essentially every time he does something new, he tops the last thing that he did.
He tops the Francosity yeah, of
yeah
it.
Yeah. It's as though he's trying to push things as far as he can. So he does soap opera. Goes to a prestigious college and does really well. And like, you're like, how does he keep doing things that don't make any sense?
Yes.
You know, for an actor like that, like what you expect from him.
Uh-huh.
And then he like, I don't know where he can go next, because the YouTube video of him singing with all of these drag queens is incredible. And it's, I just don't know what could possibly be next.
How about the video of him reading poetry,
yes,
in bed?
What about the video of, didn't he destroy a room?
Yeah.
Is it the same video?
No, it was a completely different video. Yeah.
He keeps
another one
doing stuff.
And he destroys his apartment.
Yeah. They were like, it was some video of like, just destroy this room.
Yeah. Here, James Franco, here's a room. What do you want to do to this room? Yeah.
Do you think that they... Like, what came first? The idea that we want to do something with James Franco, mm-hmm, or was it we want to get an actor to destroy a room?
I think it had to be we want to do something with James
and
Franco.
And did Franco come in? He's like, well, why don't you make a little room and I'll destroy it?
Yeah, very possible. I think that's entirely possible. I mean, what would you do?
I don't
if
know.
You were like, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we want to make a video of you doing something. I mean, of course, your mind immediately is going to go, well, I want to do something really ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
It's incredible. He out-Francos himself every time.
He does.
And
he does.
I think that's why he...
And I hate him for it.
I don't have the hate part of it.
No,
I think
either,
it's
really
great.
I do.
I understand like your frustration.
Yeah.
But he... The fact that he is constantly trying to go against what you expect of him, I think, is pretty great.
Yeah. He is accomplishing... He has defined himself as, or he hasn't defined himself as, but he is exhibiting the traits,
yeah,
of a Renaissance person.
Ooh.
A polymath. To the T.
A polymath.
Which is also, come to find out,
yeah,
a word called a polymath.
We learned this.
We did.
Sometimes we learn things.
Yeah. This is like an educational episode. Consider this a lesson.
Yeah.
If you were at Yale... And you were in a class with James Franco?
Yeah.
You might learn things like polymaths.
Yeah, polymaths.
Yeah.
Not always to do
probably
with
because
math.
He's teaching the class. Did you know that he teaches,
too? I learned this, yeah.
He's also a teacher.
He'll teach, yeah. Why not?
Why not?
What
else
what
is
if you
do?
Walked into class, James Franco's your professor?
Oh, God. Man.
How would you handle that?
Just like turn around and walk back.
I gotta go.
Yeah.
like
make a,
I'm gonna drop
just
this
a complete
class.
U-turn. Yeah.
I can't stand up to this.
Yeah. But he's the first, I think, polymath or Renaissance personality to really come along in such a pronounced way in a while. Which
yeah
I think is maybe why everybody is sort of having this reaction to him. You know, we don't have a whole lot of precedent in recent history,
yeah,
of people of his ilk doing as many things as he's doing, like, so successfully.
Generally, with celebrities, what they tend to do when they branch out from acting is they either start directing,
mm,
or they start doing charity.
And most often, they just fail miserably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I
think that's the key difference there is that Franco is successful in most of his efforts outside of acting.
Yes.
And alarmingly so.
Yeah. Frustratingly so.
Yeah.
But Are you taking summer classes now? Are you in school right now as we speak, or no?
No.
Okay,
no summer
good.
Classes.
All right, yeah. No summer school for you. No, but you are still currently enrolled in school.
I am, yeah. I have another year of classes at the schools I'm in right
to
now.
To get your master's degree? Or PhD? Or what are they?
Yeah, both, yeah.
Are they? Okay, all right. It's unbelievable. And you taught a class. Is it true that you taught a class about James Franco?
No.
No? Okay.
We can get into that.
So that's, you know, our current idea. He's sort of a template or a poster child, perhaps, for what a current polymath Renaissance person is like. But of course, this goes way back.
Way back.
Way back.
Way, way back.
The Renaissance.
Yeah. We're not just going back to the 80s like we normally do. We're going way back.
Way back.
Dial that back a little bit more, Doc Brown.
Hey, folks. Let's go way back.
How far back are we going?
The Renaissance was what? The 1500s?
Does it go back that far? I don't think it does. I think it's more
1600s
like...
1600s or 1700s?
Yeah, sometime around there. So the Renaissance, well, maybe it does. It's a period stretching. Yeah,
Renaissance.
The Renaissance.
Renaissance.
Renaissance. French, isn't it? Isn't it French?
Yeah,
it was at least in Europe.
Well, the word Renaissance is French, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But the concept of the Renaissance.
Yeah. Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it goes back to the Enlightenment. Yeah right, sure. And the idea being that everybody, in order to truly... maximize the potential of the human persona.
Yeah.
One should not simply focus on any one trade or one goal in one's life.
Right.
But rather explore as many as possible.
Jack of all trades.
Uh huh.
But a master
Jill of all
of
trades.
None. Sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, but in some cases, ironically, like a lot of these people. That sort of came to define that idea of the Renaissance man. They were masters of many of them.
Yep.
So I think like the quintessential probably Renaissance man is Leonardo da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
I'm sorry, Leonardo
da Vinci
was the quintessential Renaissance person.
He certainly, I think, the one that comes to mind, especially when you mention the Renaissance in general.
Because he invented it, right?
He invented it. He woke up one day and was like, look, guys, I got this idea. We're all kind of stuck in a rut. Nobody's making anything anymore. No one's doing art. No one's inventing. I want to do all these things. So I came up with this thing. We're going to call it the Renaissance. It's French.
Like all great things are.
And we're all just going to do multiple things. Like... You know, Aristotle, you're going to be a philosopher and a professor, all right? Isaac Newton, you're going to be a scientist and something else.
And you're going to make cookies.
You're going to make cookies. They're more like little sandwiches, but you'll make them.
They're not cookies, but they are.
They're odd.
Yeah.
But look,
thanks
for
making
it,
them,
man. We're all going to do lots of stuff, and we're going to be good at all the things that we do.
Yeah.
Okay, no slacking off around
here. It's inspiring.
Here. All right.
It's kind of like it's sort of like the 17th century equivalent of Bill Paxton's speech. No, Bill Pullman's speech in Independence Day. Right? He's like,
"Game over.
We
man.
Won't go quietly into the night. We won't vanish without a fight.
Yeah.
We're gonna learn to do lots of stuff.
Yeah, and it'll be our Renaissance
and it'll be the Renaissance Day."
So Leonardo da Vinci, he's the one that comes to mind when we talk about or think about the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. What was he? He was an inventor.
He was.
He was an artist.
Mm-hmm.
He was was he a philosopher?
Yeah, I think so.
He was a thinker.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a doer.
Yeah, he was. All of those things are correct.
We've got lots of things, lots of references to him. The Vitruvian Man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may not know that by name.
But you've probably seen it.
You've seen it so many times, and you probably just didn't know this is what it's called. It's the guy in the circle.
Mm-hmm.
He's standing, arms out.
He's kind of making a snow angel.
Legs out, yep.
Yeah.
And there's a circle drawn around him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Vitruvian Man.
What's the significance of the Vitruvian Man?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't either.
I mean, maybe you should look it up
while
we're sitting here, and we can – figure it out. He Leonardo da Vinci, he came up with an early concept for a helicopter, right?
Mm-hmm. He did. It didn't work, but he came up with the idea.
It was a cool idea, and yeah. What if it had worked?
And everybody was like, wow, what an awesome dude.
He, of course, is known for his artistry. What's one of his famous paintings?
Did he do the Mona Lisa?
I think he did the Mona Lisa.
Oh, okay.
I think. I didn't
clearly,
want to say it.
Clearly, he got some notoriety for it.
If it was wrong, if that's wrong, you said it.
No, I think
no,
you're right.
He did the Mona Lisa, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, to this day is still considered a great work of art.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest.
It's okay, yeah.
It's very small.
It's smaller than you think, yeah.
You think it's big.
Given its stature in culture.
It's a little thing.
Yeah. He did the Vitruvian Man, which...
what's so great about it?
It's considered the melding of the concepts of art and science.
Mm.
So in a way, you could say it's sort of the badge of the Renaissance.
Wow.
You know, it's bringing together these multiple disciplines from completely opposed or previously opposed sectors of human thinking and development, and it's bringing them together, and it's making them a badass logo.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's the Vitruvian Man.
So, you've got Da Vinci doing his thing. Earlier on than him, you've got people like Aristotle.
Right.
I'm guessing Plato.
Yeah, I'd put them together.
Probably Socrates.
Oh, yeah. Socrates. Socrates Johnson.
Who makes an excellent appearance in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Socrates. I love that. He's pretty great in that movie.
Yeah, too. Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, he's one of the best.
Socrates. You have, I'm going to guess Galileo.
Mm-hmm.
Was I mean, I'm assuming
pretty much anybody,
these,
any of the big names
it seems
from that
like
period,
they
yeah.
were very versatile.
Yeah, yeah.
In what they did, and my part of that might be because not only were they making discoveries or inventing or philosophizing,
mm-hmm.
they were writing about it.
They were documenting their yeah.
I mean, that in of itself already. Does that give you the status? I mean, how is it decided that you're a Renaissance person or a polymath? What counts? Can you just do two things? Do you have to do more than two?
I don't know. I think maybe it's not so much the number of things that you do. I think it's more the precedent, mm-hmm. whether or not it's those two things have been done by the same person before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're breaking new ground, if you're finding a way to accomplish multiple things that previously had been sort of separate accomplishments,
uh-huh.
And challenging ones at that,
yeah.
and yet you're somehow managing to balance them both
and do
or
well.
More of them, yeah, successfully. I think that's sort of like the basic quality for it, because if you look back, no one really. At least in sort of like the public mind, nobody quite accomplished as many things, arguably, as Da Vinci did, or at least in as many areas, successfully explored as many areas as he did.
Right.
but we have a history of polymaths, a lot of people who have found success in one area and then expanded upon that success, gone into other areas for one reason or another. And some of those maybe are bigger leaps than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're distinguished because of their ability to manage all of those.
Yeah.
You know, they are recognized publicly by history or by the culture at hand for being able to do that.
Does it become easier to do... Like, once you're successful at one thing, does it become easier to do another?
You know, I sort of feel like it does. I sort of feel like a lot of it's probably your level of confidence. And when you're able to accomplish one thing that is considered by most people a pretty challenging feat, then if you know you just roll that into another, you're coming at it already with an established success behind you. It's not like you're just reaching in the dark.
Success breeds success.
I've heard that before.
Doesn't?
I think Da Vinci said that.
I thought I made that up.
No.
And you said it wrong. Da Vinci. So you could do just two things, but if there are two very challenging things and you do them very well, mm-hmm. you probably get counted as a polymath.
A polymath. I think poly means more than one, so.
Of course it does.
I'm a linguist. I'm a polymath. Podcaster.
Oh.
Word guy.
Word guy. Professional word guy.
Yeah. Word dude. Teach a course on that, Franco.
So what's so great about polymaths? Like, why do we like them? Do we like them? I like them.
I think we appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we appreciate what they're able to do. Whether we like them or not probably depends a lot on ourselves.
If they're nice.
And if they, you know.
Or are they jerks?
Yeah. Do they show up at the party with the chips? Or do they come to the party with, like.
I bet a lot of them are jerks, actually.
I think you're probably right.
Really successfully smart and driven
mm-hmm.
people tend to be somewhat aggressive.
There is something of a precedent for that, I think. I think also, too, when you have somebody who's sort of firing on all cylinders at all times, constantly, you know, looking for new ways to do things or, you know, new ways to do new things, you don't have the time necessarily or the bandwidth, the mental bandwidth to worry about being a sociably
acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes. And you're often forgiven for it.
Yeah. You get a pass on that because, dude, you drew a helicopter in the 15th century or whatever.
But I don't know. I mean, I think you could always be nice.
Well, the truly great polymaths, I think,
are nice.
Are nice, yeah.
James Franco.
James Franco. Wait, no, he is nice. He's a great
guy. Is he
nice? That's my perception. Is that
he looks
nice? Yeah, he seems nice.
Seems like a nice person.
Yeah, he's goes beyond just being a really successful dude, and also, you know, he's a good person. Those are the people that we like. Those are the polymaths that we want to see succeed. You know, the ones who are not so nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that somebody like Hitler was a polymath, and he was definitely not a nice person.
No.
You know?
No one would argue that he was nice.
Exactly.
But yeah, he did a lot of stuff. He painted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he was a...
He was a scholar.
...horrible dictator.
Yes.
That's
a polymath.
So let's talk about some more modern examples.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's bridge the gender gap here because it's feeling we're getting a little heavy in the dudes.
Yeah, there's a lot of dudes hanging out in the polymath
and
room.
It's not really fair. So let's talk about Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey. I would call her a polymath.
You know, whether you like her or not, she does a lot.
Yeah, she does.
She came from some pretty interesting upbringing, but you know, she had the talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I've heard of it.
And then originally it was, you know, sort of like tabloid talk TV, but then she branched it out and she kind of reinvented the way that a talk show can work.
She sort of legitimized it.
Daytime talk.
Yeah.
She made it legit rather than sort of sensationalist.
Yeah.
But then from there, she started acting. She started producing films, writing. Doesn't she write a book?
Yeah, she's written a bunch of books. She's sort of like a, I would say now she's more of like a publisher or.
She's a mogul.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a media mogul.
What's the difference?
I think it's the fact that she not only runs the media network, but you know, she's an active participant in it.
I mean, what's the difference between a mogul and a polymath?
Right.
Are
that's what
all
I'm saying.
Moguls
like,
polymaths?
No,
No.
No.
I don't
because you
so
could
either.
Say that like Rupert Murdoch is a mogul.
Yeah.
But he's not usually writing or producing or directing or acting. He's not engaged in any of the things that he is overseeing. He's just facilitating them.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the difference. So
she she sort of reinvented daytime talk and then went on to like create this empire.
Mm-hmm.
This media empire.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, she's got her book club. She's got her magazine. She's done, I think she has like foundations and stuff.
She has whole networks now. Like
now multiple, she has a whole network.
Multiple.
The Oprah Winfrey channels. Network.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She co-founded Oxygen Network.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She's also, I would say, something of like a philanthropist mm-hmm. and not like maybe not an activist, but she's a spokesperson for a lot of causes.
Yeah.
She raises awareness about things. Yeah. She's very active.
So our modern, you know, it's interesting because it seems like the modern polymath, at least the ones that are well known, are celebrities.
Of a type.
I mean,
sort of seem like that.
So back in the Renaissance, there were scientists and philosophers and mm-hmm. thinkers and, you know, stuff like that. Nowadays, it seems more that, you know, if you do multiple art forms or if you're have your hand in multiple sort of media pies, mm-hmm. then that sort of throws you into that polymath category. You don't hear a whole lot about polymaths that fit into the mold of Da Vinci
mm-hmm.
or others. Although one springs to mind, and that's Carl Sagan.
Oh, yeah.
Who was, you know, a physicist, mm-hmm. Astronomer.
Mm.
And a filmmaker. I mean, he made this series of, I don't know what you call them movies, but, you know, mm-hmm. shows called Cosmos.
Right.
He was a big proponent of bringing science to the public and making it consumable.
Yeah. Making
you
it
know?
More engaging.
And, I think there are a few people like that now, like Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
Follows in those footsteps, I think, to a certain degree.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines. Every hunter and forager. Every hero and coward. Every creator and destroyer of civilization. Every king and peasant. Every young couple in love. Every mother and father. Hopeful child. Inventor and explorer. Every teacher of morals. Every corrupt politician. Every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam.
Yeah, the ones that get the prominence these days are the celebrities,
mm-hmm.
in an interesting way. I don't know if that's good or bad, or if it's either.
I think it's probably more just like a symptom of the era.
You know?
I think like scientists in the Middle Ages were so far removed from the sort of common villager, you know? I feel like that's sort of the same dynamic we have now where, you know, celebrities are sort of operating on kind of a different plane than the rest of us.
Yeah.
And in a way we've sort of made it that way. You know, we've catered to that.
Oh yeah.
That dynamic. So those are the people that we look to, in the same way that previous generations maybe looked at scientists,
yeah,
or looked at artists, you know?
Yeah.
But that said, there are a lot of people I think who develop those skills, a particular trade or an ability, and that is sort of what leads them to the path of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that they are celebrities allows them to
branch out,
dabble in other areas. I mean, yeah. I would say Oprah is a perfect example of that. You know, she probably would not have become quite the humanitarian or, you know, a publishing mogul.
Had the opportunity.
Right. She might have become an author or an actress, but it's not necessarily, if she hadn't found such a dynamic success with one thing, it stands to reason that maybe she would not have been able to branch out in the way that she did.
So there's the celebrity polymath. There's mm-hmm. the science polymath.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the entrepreneur polymath.
Oh.
And for me, what comes to mind is Walt Disney.
Yeah, good call.
Talk about
I'm going to agree with that.
You know a lot more about Walt Disney than I do.
I don't know anything about Walt Disney.
He's a theme park purveyor.
Yeah. You could say that everything that Walt Disney got famous for or was successful at is sort of follows the same theme, which is like storytelling.
Yeah.
He's telling stories in ways that stories hadn't been told before.
All right.
So animation was mm-hmm. sort of how he made his big splash. And what really kind of set him apart from other animators and other animation studios was that he was willing to – he saw the potential for creating a full-length feature.
Yeah.
Which at that time, this is 1937, had not been done. So when he made Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, it's literally the first feature-length movie that's all animated.
Right.
You know, nobody had ever done that before. Nobody believed that really that it would work.
Yeah.
You know, people thought like a cartoon's a cartoon. It's not, you can't consume an hour and a half cartoon or, you know.
Right.
And he proved them wrong. And then he was one of the leaders in television when television started out. A lot of filmmakers sort of ran from TV.
Yeah.
And he kind of embraced it and saw it as a way to create stuff. Filmed material, you know, stuff that's displayed on a screen, but it's done in a completely different way than anybody had done in the films,
right?
You know, and so he came up with nature documentaries. He was the first one to really do a nature documentary. Huh. He sort of created that model, or science TV. You know, he was the first one to do that, and that all was really done as a way to finance his other idea,
mm-hmm.
which was dimensional storytelling, which mm-hmm. is sort of where the theme parks come in. You know, creating an environment that tells a story around you that you're a part of. When he had the idea for Disneyland, he financed that primarily through the TV show.
It's interesting that he seems very interested in educating the public.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, with the nature shows, the science shows, even the cartoons themselves, a lot of times had some sort of educational bent to them.
Yeah.
Like Donald and Math Magic
Math Land. Magic Land. Which is
an amazing cartoon.
Yeah.
And then there's like the Colors. What's he called? Ludwig von Drake.
Yes.
And the Colors
mm-hmm.
song, I think.
I forget what the full title is, but yeah.
Those early cartoons are so cool. And I think he, and along with a lot of polymaths, have this desire to bring stuff to the public, like to you know, whether it's art or education or what have you. He wanted to share it.
He wanted to enrich people's lives or make it, bring stuff out, make it accessible.
Which all, you know, that's sort of circles back to the whole idea behind the Renaissance and the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
You know, it's making us better than we are.
Yeah.
You know?
And inspiring us to do more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but Disney, he had the shows, he had the movies, he had the theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
What else did he have? He had more, right?
Well, I mean, he had sort of, but I think at a certain point he did sort of step back, you know, kind of like Oprah, you know, he sort of stepped back from the hands-on on, guiding every element. But then, he's later on, this wasn't so much like he's not really known for this because he was never able to fully act upon it. But throughout the later years of his life, he became very sort of obsessed with urban development and redevelopment. Huh. And the whole idea behind Epcot Center mm-hmm. in Florida originally was going to be like a model city of the future. Ah. It wasn't going to be a theme park. It was going to sort of solve all of the urban problems that had developed in cities. And that, I think, represents a huge leap from what he had done, you know, previously. Mm-hmm. And his ideas were sort of viewed as the culmination of everything he had already done, sort of taking these far-fetched ideas, almost fanciful concepts, and finding a way to make them relevant in a real sphere. Mm-hmm. You could say it was an outgrowth of Disneyland, the theme parks, or whatnot. But it's in terms of like making movies, going from making movies and making cartoons to actually shaping the world that yeah. everybody lives in, that's a pretty big leap. And yeah. it's a huge, you know, and there's no way of telling whether or not he would have been successful in that. But a lot of his ideas did get implemented. Like, I mean, like a lot of the transportation systems that are in use today mm-hmm. Sort of came out of the idea of doing a people mover monorail style right. mass transit system. The organization of stuff, the way like cities now are developed around green spaces, mm-hmm. That came directly out of the theme parks. Mm-hmm. You know, having a very specific sense of place where things right. are planned out before they're developed, starting with a fresh piece of land and building onto it. That all came, you know, more or less directly from his experience.
Nice. So. There you go.
He's okay.
Yeah, he did all right.
He did all right.
He's all right. Right.
We call it Epcot. Spelled E-P-C-O-T. Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. Here it is in larger scale. Epcot will take its cue from the new ideas and new technologies that are now emerging from the creative centers of American industry. It will be a community of tomorrow that will never be completed, but will always be introducing and testing and demonstrating new materials and new systems. And Epcot will always be a showcase to the world for the ingenuity and imagination of American free enterprise. I don't believe there's a challenge anywhere in the world that's more important to people everywhere and finding solutions to the problems of our cities. But where do we begin? How do we start answering this great challenge? Well, we're convinced we must start with the public need. And the need is not just for curing the old ills of old cities. We think the need is for starting from scratch on virgin land and building a special kind of new community. So that's what Epcot is. An experimental prototype community that will always be in a state of becoming. It will never cease to be a living blueprint of the future, where people actually live a life they can't find anywhere else in the world.
What else? What are some other polymaths?
Well, okay. Well, there's one that that is a really fun one to talk about. Think about, and mm-hmm. that is Bo Jackson.
Bo
knows baseball.
He does.
And Bo knows football?
Yeah. Those are the two big ones.
What teams did he play? So Bo Jackson, an athlete from the 80s.
Yeah.
Who was renowned for playing both professional baseball and professional football.
Like concurrently.
Yeah, at the same like, time.
Basically, like his like seasons literally the would same like day, overlap. He would, yeah.
You would see him... He'd be running down.
He would run out of
the football.
He would catch the football. He would run through the end zone, out of the stadium. Yep. The football would transform into a baseball. And his uniform would transform. And he would run to Kansas City.
And he
would slide into home plate.
Holding the baseball.
Holding the baseball.
No one knew why. But they gave him the run.
Because he was Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
They were all impressed that he could do it.
Like, how did you do that, man?
It was like an honorary run.
Did he play? So he played baseball for Kansas City.
I think, yeah. He was in the Royals. Kansas City
Who
Royals.
Who did he play football
and he
for?
He played football for the Raiders.
Oakland? It wasn't Oakland at that time.
I think they were Oakland.
It?
I think they were. Or maybe they were Los Angeles at that time. They were
in California. That's insane. Like, not only two sports.
It's a hell of a long run. I mean.
Do you think he ever got confused, like, playing one sport and thought he was playing the other?
Yeah, like he...
like, did he pull a bat out when the ball was football comes passed at him? To him?
Yeah, and just hits it into the stands.
Tries to run to a base.
Yeah. hits the ball into the stands and then runs around the
you
stadium.
You idiot! You're playing football right now.
Or, you know, like the pitcher throws the pitch and he just, like, grabs it and runs at him. Yeah. We lost a lot of pitchers during the Bo Jackson regime.
Regime. So the Nike took, was it Nike, right? That
I think
those
it was
commercials?
Nike. Yeah, yeah.
Took full advantage of this. And there was the whole Bo Nose TV spot era. And the one I remember the most, it was like a, you know, a parade of different athletes. Like, were they saying Bo doesn't know? Or no, they were saying Bo Knows tennis.
Yeah, yeah.
Bo Knows polo. Yeah. But then at the end, it got to Bo Diddley.
Oh, yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's playing his blues guitar.
His guitar. Yeah.
And he goes, Bo don't know Diddley.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes.
Such an absurd commercial.
Yeah, but it worked.
And it worked.
We all believed it.
Yeah.
And I believe Bo Jackson was one of the three sports characters in the cartoon. Was it All Stars? It was Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, man.
And I think Bo Jackson. And they were like superheroes, but they were sports figures. And they could, like, their whatever their relevant sport was affected their abilities. So Wayne Gretzky could, like, pop skates out of his feet and then, like, shoot slap shots at the bad guys. And Bo Jackson, I think, had, like, a baseball bat that would, like, throw a ball out of it, and he could, you know, hit the ball
hit
with
the ball.
Bat.
See, I think it's sort of thinking with this idea in mind, like, do you think that the other guys, like Gretzky and Jordan...
other sports?
No, I'm thinking, like, in that superhero scenario, does it take on sort of, like, the Justice League dynamic where...
every sport.
Where you've got, like, Bo Jackson is Superman, and he can do anything.
Yeah.
And you've got, like, Gretzky, who is sort of, like, Batman.
I would make Gretzky, like, The Flash, actually.
Okay, yeah.
He's sort of, like, you sort of see the reason he's there, but you also wonder, do they really need him?
Yeah. Couldn't they get by without him?
I think
couldn't
Michael
Superman
Jordan
just
is
run
more
fast?
Like your Batman.
Okay.
Because he's like the second best.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not as good as Bo Jackson.
But he doesn't actually have all the capabilities of Bo Jackson.
And then Jackie Joyner Kersee is Wonder Woman. And we need an Aquaman. Michael Phelps.
Yeah. That's excellent.
I thought you were going to ask, when these athletes saw Bo Jackson, were they like, I should start playing
more
one
sports? Well, they did. Didn't Michael Jordan? Yeah.
Michael Jordan didn't play them concurrently. When he retired, from basketball, he decided to play baseball.
Yeah.
Poorly. Although I think Deion Sanders played football and baseball.
Yeah, he did. And he was like right after Bo Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. So he followed in the footsteps.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a hockey player that played like hockey and something else.
Yeah. Well, because hockey's not a sport, really.
Oh,
so.
Wow. Oh, no. You care about sports, you're going to be mad.
No, I think, but it, like, hockey is such like a specific skill set, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
it doesn't necessarily translate to.
Well,
like, I mean, I guess, you know.
But
like,
you don't need it to translate.
Maybe.
Like, how does, you know, football and baseball are fairly different.
Yeah,
their...
but I get, like, they involve running. They involve hand-eye coordination. They involve your ability to catch things. You know what I'm saying? Like, make some arguments.
Well, hockey requires all those things. Except for running.
But in different ways. Yeah, like skating. Yeah. You need to be able to, you know, skate very quickly.
Michael Jordan should have done baseball at the same time as basketball.
I agree.
If he wanted people to take him seriously.
He should have learned to play water polo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Bo Jackson, he is a polymath.
Yeah.
That's a sports polymath.
Go Bo.
Is that what people said?
No.
Good. They said
terrible.
They said Bo knows.
Yeah.
Bo knows baseball. Bo knows basketball.
Bo didn't know hockey.
Yeah, that was part of the commercial. Like, in the commercial, it gets to, because all the athletes are showing up.
Yeah.
And saying, Bo knows this. And then Wayne Gretzky skates into frame, and he just shakes his head. He's like, no.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that now.
So
yeah.
Gretzky got his little jab in there, didn't
Zing.
He?
Zing.
Yeah, nice one. Nice one, Wayne.
Michael's prime is slam time.
Pro stars, show stars.
Wayne's hot, slap shot. Bo knows where to go.
Pro stars, Bo stars. All stars, Pro stars.
Jordan jams in your face. Gonna put them in their place.
It's all about helping kids.
Who else do we got in this category?
In the realm of the polymath?
Yeah.
I would say you could make the argument that somebody like a Michael Crichton or an Andy Warhol.
Okay.
Could maybe be considered like
talk about Michael Crichton.
So Michael Crichton.
He's an author.
He's an author. But he was a novelist.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, he branched into screenwriting, which is not a huge leap. A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
But he also directed.
Okay.
So he was, and I think he was a journalist too. You know,
I was going to say, I thought he was a journalist at some point.
Doing like either travelogues or you know, science writing.
I think the biggest leap would be to go into directing.
Yeah.
Like it's not hard to see a journalist becoming an author.
Right. But it does say it's a completely different environment. Like you when you're a writer, you know, granted you have to keep your audience in mind, you know, and you have editors and things like that. But for the most part, you're controlling everything.
Yeah.
You know, you are absolutely, whatever you say happens, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to fabricate anything. Like you just do it, you just write it and it happens. But like when you're a director,
you're dependent. I mean, you can still make those decisions,
right.
But you're dependent on the resources available to you.
Yes. Yes. It's going from unlimited resources to very limited resources. Yeah.
To trying to establish a vision with what you have versus anything.
Yeah.
Anything you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could see the mindset, right? His the skills that exist and his ability to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
Can transfer over to directing, but he has to work with a completely different tool set.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did he direct?
I know he directed Westworld,
which is Jurassic Park before Jurassic Park.
Exactly. Yeah. So you see the connection there. It's kind of you can kind of see how one fed into the other.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
It's about a theme park
mm-hmm.
made up of these robots. That there's like a Western section and a Greek section.
There's like Westworld. There's Renaissance World.
Yeah.
And
essentially, you would go here and like walk around and see these robots acting out this environment.
Yeah.
Right.
It was supposed to be like this fully immersive experience, and you could do things in this fake Western or Greek world or whatever that you couldn't do in the real world because it would impact other humans.
Yeah.
You know? But here
there was robots.
It's just robots. So if you get into human
looking robots.
Right. Fully articulate, fully realized humanoid robots. Yeah. So convincing. if you couldn't get into a shootout on the street without reaping the consequences of that. But at Westworld, if you came upon an outlaw or something, you could shoot him down.
Yul Brynner shows up.
If you came across Yul Brynner, you could shoot him.
If you wanted to, who would want to?
I wouldn't shoot Yul Brynner.
But of course, what happens when we assume that we can control technology?
Oh.
Well, it proves to be uncontrollable.
It becomes a polymath.
And
it becomes James Franco. Are you implying that James Franco is a robot?
He might be. That may be his next thing.
That's where he goes next. That's where he takes it.
Does he create a robot or does he turn himself into a robot?
I think he becomes a robot. I think he finds a way to
turn
into a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
like Michael Jackson in that one
Moonwalker. And then he'll win the first Oscar as a robot.
As a robot?
Or something like that.
Yeah, the first post-human Oscar.
It's not enough that he would become a robot. There's some other layer he has to add on to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the first robot president. He'll be president one day.
Oh, of course he's going to be president, yeah.
It's just a matter of whether he'll be a robot or not. That's up in the air. But he'll definitely be president eventually. I think we can agree.
Yeah. I think we should go campaign for him now.
Yeah, honestly. I mean...
we got to get him in the race. There's still time.
There is. What's going to run as independent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or he'll make a new party.
He can just create a new political party.
Why hasn't he done that? That's up next. The Francos. The Franklicans.
Oh, I like that.
The Francocrats.
Franklin Delano Franco.
The only people in his party are James Franco and Franklin Delano Franco, which is a clone.
Just a robot clone of James Franco.
Oh. I thought it was going to be a robot clone of Roosevelt.
No. Who cares about Roosevelt when you've got Franco?
Franco. He'll eventually do a movie with Franco bots. All
playing
him.
All the roles. Yeah. Malkovich.
Yeah.
Malkovich, but it'll be robots.
But it
Franco.
Won't be absurd. It'll be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it will be heralded as one of the greatest movies ever made.
Because it will be.
Oh, yeah. That's what you get when you get Franco. I really am interested to see what he does next.
Yeah. I think he's interested in... He's maybe more interested than anybody in what he's going to do next,
I think.
He
even knows.
He doesn't
know. It just happens. He wakes up.
What am I going to do today?
It's like, I'm going to become a robot today. It's time.
What have I not done yet? Well, there's that.
I haven't become a robot yet.
Haven't created a toothpaste.
Franco's brand toothpaste. He will do it.
Makes your teeth cooler. Smarter. I don't know.
It'll be the best toothpaste on the market. It'll cure cavities. Like, no more dentist trips.
Yeah.
If you have a cavity, use Franco's toothpaste.
Franco. And polymaths.
Yeah.
Come on, you guys. Come on. Get into the archive.
Get in there.
All of you.
Yeah.
Franco. Come on. Yeah, show them in.
Da Vinci.